You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Marlins reporter Joe Frisaro. And Joe, you look at this Marlins team right now finishing off a long West Coast trip, a nine-game trip through the western part of the country. So far right now, 4-4 going into Wednesday's game. So a chance to come out of this with a winning record, which is good. Obviously helped by finishing things off with the Padres, a team that's certainly struggling. But they get a big lift on Tuesday night from Jeff Mathis. Obviously, Mathis, a guy that's a catcher that's there for his catching skills and not for his bat. And I know Don Mattingly's been trying to get him in there against lefties. He did a chance to do that. Comes through the big grand slam and a five-run first, and that's all the runs the Marlins got. But it's always nice to get a lift from your backup catcher.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tim, you know, Jeff Mathis, he's one of those guys that's the batting average, the career batting average is under 200. Clearly not an offensive player, but, you know, definitely one of the most popular and favorite players on the team. Adds so much value in his ability to handle pitchers, play defense, his leadership, his mentorship to JT Realmuto, who's having a really good season and a promising player as well. So for Mathis to contribute with the bat was huge for him. Obviously, he's not going to be doing that, you know, very often, but Mattingly did note that he'd like to try to match him up with lefties a little bit more because he hits a little bit better against them. Just so happened the last two starts he had, going back to a start in Arizona even last Friday against Patrick Corbin, the lefty, he drew a walk in the seventh inning that helped set up Justin Bour's grand slam. So any contributions at the plate are a huge lift. But I think what we're seeing, you know, kind of on a bigger picture that we've seen start to emerge on this road trip is the penchant for the big inning. You know, the Marlins have kind of, you know, they get a lot of hits, but they don't do a ton with runners in scoring position or driving in runs. They're not a big home run hitting team, but they had two innings with seven, in Minnesota and carried over into Arizona, and then a five run inning in the first on game two of the series in San Diego. So they are starting to show signs of the ability to break a game open or at least get back into a game by scoring in bunches and innings.
Yeah, you mentioned them not being a big home run hitting team, and even less so when Giancarlo Stanton continues to struggle the way he has. And now he's been out of the lineup a decent amount lately. I know he has said enough talk, I just need to get things turned around on the field. But what's going on as far as him getting the rest and
Yeah, it's they seem to say physically he's fine or getting as fine as can be from that right side issue. Again, we don't know exactly what that was, whether it was a rib or intercostal or an oblique type thing. But you know he played against the lefty on game two here in San Diego, and then he sits against a right-hander in favor of Itro. Even on the day he had a double and scored the ball 160 miles an hour, which is always a great sign to see. But one thing I've heard is Stan's kind of trying to get out of this alone. He's not, he's kind of putting everyone at arm's length and including the coaching staff. And he's, he's heard from so many different people, so many ways to get out of the slump that he's kind of wanting to do it himself. And I don't know whether that has anything to do with Mattingly going with Itro a little bit more, but obviously Itro has been hitting like crazy and is completely adding a spark. So might be combination of ride the hot hand with Itro and, allow Stanton to do it his own way.
I guess there's something about hearing too many voices and it all kind of getting cloudy and confusing. So I think you need to be able to focus in on maybe one person that you trust. And you would hope with the Marlins that would be
you would think,
a guy like Barry Bonds.
I'll give you a quick story.
Right?
Back in 2005, Mike Lowell's last year with the Marlins, he had a miserable year at the plate. He hit, I think, 8 home runs that whole year. And here Lowell at the time had been a multiple all-star, a silver slugger. He was a very accomplished player with Miami then. And he got off to a slow start and everybody was telling him what to do, and he seen he had a bad year, and then he kind of, after that year, he kind of acknowledges that one guy would say this, and he would work on that, and it wouldn't work, and then someone had something else, and he just kind of went back to being himself, and he obviously resurfaced in Boston a couple of years later and was a World Series MVP. So, sometimes hearing too many voices or not really trusting, you know, or maybe even, you know, with Stanton, knowing him well, he kind of puts a lot in himself, so he may be trying to do things internally to just try to get out of it. But clearly, you know, he's the one in the batter's box. He's the one that's got to make the adjustments. But one thing that has been pointed out to me, and probably obvious to people who watch him a lot, is how far away he is from the plate and, you know, how often he's beat on the outside portion of it. So whether he feels he could cover that portion of the plate, you know, being where he feels comfortable or making the adjustment, that's to be seen.
Does being off the plate, that brings up a question just right in my head, is there anything to do with him being hit in the head? I mean, is that why
no,
he's off the plate?
And
is there a little nerve there?
That was now 2 years ago. And, you know, keep in mind,
right,
he had, 20-something homers, 26, 27 homers last year, and got hurt in late June. And you know, he was doing it a year, less than a year after the injury. So he could say, but, you know, he has worn that face guard against right-handed pitching and not against lefties. And now he's starting to take it off against certain righties. And I've asked him about it in the past. There's never a definitive answer. Obviously, you would think that Syndergaard is throwing 99. It closes one up and in. You may want to wear it. But, you know, guys like Ricky Nolasco, who in Minnesota is a good friend, he didn't wear it and got a couple of hits off him. But, you know, I think he was pretty confident Ricky wasn't going to run him up and in. So I think it's a feel thing with Stanton, and just, you know, he sometimes doesn't overthink and sometimes he does overthink. So there's a lot of mystery going on here, Tim.
Well, him being out of lineup, like you said, has opened the door for Ichiro to get some consistent playing time still. And he continues to just be a huge spark for this team. And now we're getting to the more milestones. Now, 3,000 is obviously the big, legitimate major league milestone, and Ichiro's 23 shy of that heading into Wednesday night. But then there's this other number. He's one hit shy of Pete Rose's all-time hits record, except that includes all of his hits in Japan. So you can't really count that. Obviously, that doesn't count on the major league level. But it is something that's being talked about quite a bit. And I think everybody admits that you can't compare a guy that did it all in the major leagues to a guy that did half of it in Japan. Is too much being made of it, Joe? Or does this number passing Pete Rose unofficially
warrant
the attention?
My opinion, as someone who grew up watching Pete Rose and admiring him and seeing all the hits he got, obviously, and the longevity and the how hard he played the game, his numbers and his record are that, you know, and
right,
no one's taking that away. Ichiro is the first to acknowledge it too. I think what, you know, we tend to be an absolute society right now. It seems like you're either for or against, or you're all in or all out. And I just kind of look at what Ichiro's doing as an achievement that's worthy of celebration. That's not a record. You know, it's not an MLB record, but it is a significant milestone. And if you're getting 4,000 hits, that's highly significant when you consider, if you look at some of the numbers, only, like, you know, obviously three when you count Pete, Ichiro, and Ty Cobb, you know, have that. But then if you combine, like, Hank Aaron's minor league numbers and you know, Sam Usual, you still only have about six or seven people in the history of the sport, you know, with as many as 4,000 hits while they're getting a paycheck from somebody. So, you know, this is a huge achievement. You know, obviously he's going to get – it's not like he got, you know, 1,200 in the big leagues and 3,000 in Japan. It's flipped. I mean, this guy is a fascinating player. He's a remarkable player. He's an international sensation. He's a baseball icon. He's a future Hall of Famer. And what he's doing is nothing short of remarkable, and that's, I think, the achievement is really what we're celebrating, not to stick it to people in Cincinnati who feel that, you know, they're trying to you know, jab Pete. You know, no one's
right,
taking any records away from Pete Rose. We're just acknowledging the fact that a great player is doing something pretty remarkable.
And I think the amazing thing is that he's doing it right now, and he's not, like, fizzling out towards the end of his career. That's maybe how it looked maybe a year ago. But the way he's playing right now, he just looks great on the field. Joe, I wanted to touch real quick, because I know we previewed the draft a week ago. I wanted to touch quickly. One of the guys we had talked about leading up to it, as far as the Marlins were concerned, was Braxton Garrett. And that's who they go with, the high school pitcher out of Florence, Alabama. And they get him in round one, and then they had to, you know, they skip around. Then they get Thomas Jones, an athletic outfielder, another high school kid, in the third round. Those two guys seem to be good pieces. And the one thing that stood out to me as far as Garrett goes, beyond the great stuff, and he's got maybe the best breaking ball in the draft, but he's a high school kid, which makes you think right away, oh, it's going to be a long time before we see this guy. But talking to Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, they think that even though he's 17 right now or 18, he could actually be a guy that moves quickly through the minor leagues, because for a high school pitcher, he's advanced, and maybe this is a guy that's in up to the Marlins when he's 20-21.
Oh, no question. Tim, no question. I was talking to Scott Boras, who's representing him yesterday, as a matter of fact, and he was saying this is as good a high school curveball as he's ever seen. And then there's, makeup issues and composure, and all signs point that top of the rotation caliber, player. With the Marlins, they took Tyler Kolek over Carlos Rodon a couple of years ago, and Aaron Nola as well, and Tyler's now nursing, he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. So they're kind of hoping he would be one of those fast track guys to the big leagues. And, they certainly need it. Jose Fernandez is, who knows if he's going to sign here long term. And if they could get a future ace before 2018 or around 2018, 2019, I think they'd be very happy. And all signs are this kid could be pretty special.
All right, great stuff as always. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fusaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.